This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with me, Juliet Jacobs, and Dashrin Johan and Lim Soo Ann. So earlier we were talking a bit about the budget, but now we're going to go on to the other big news that was, had us all, wrapped up following everything, nail biting over the weekend.
Yeah. So as you know, the US presidential elections happened over the weekend. So we want to know, how has the outcome affected you? So we have a poll running on our Twitter at BFM Radio. We have three options. I'm geared up for G15. The second option, made me register to vote. And the third option, no effect. So right now it's neck and neck between the first and the third option. So 47.2% of y'all say I'm geared up for G15, and 47.2% of y'all say no effect, with 5.6% of y'all saying made me register to vote. So the results here kind of, reflect the final stages of the presidential elections, counting. Yeah. So do send us your thoughts. You can leave a comment under the poll. You can take the poll at BFM Radio. Alternatively, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899.
That's right. So the big news over the weekend was, of course, the results of the US elections. After four nail-biting days of vote counting and a very close race, Democratic candidate and former Vice President Joe Biden was declared the winner on Saturday. So that means that incumbent President Donald Trump will not be serving a second term. And interestingly, that is actually a pretty rare occurrence in American history. That is for a running incumbent president to not be re-elected. And if you look back into US history, it often says quite a lot about why a president might lose the people's mandate after just one term.
So just a bit of an update before we get into this topic. As of last count, Biden has won 290 electoral college votes and he needed 270 to win. Biden has also gotten about 75,400,000 of the popular vote versus incumbent Trump's 70,900,000 votes. President Trump still hasn't conceded the election, but most experts are largely saying there is no reason why Biden wouldn't be able to legitimately step into office, which, as you just said, Juliet, will make Trump a one-term president.
Yeah, so for a little bit of background, the US presidency is a two-term office, meaning an elected president can only be re-elected once. And as you might imagine, most presidents and their supporting party do aim to fulfill both those terms. And out of the 45 US presidents so far, only 9 have run for re-election and failed to be re-elected. So now there are others who have chosen not to run again, but that's a different story. The fact remains that as of this past weekend, Donald Trump joined a pretty small club of presidents who were voted out.
Yes, and we just wanted to give you a quick rundown of these 9 presidents. So John Adams, US's second president, didn't get re-elected in 1801, and that was largely due to clashes with his vice president, Thomas Jefferson, and his treasury secretary, Alexander Hamilton. And John Quincy Adams was not re-elected in 1829. Martin Van Buren in 1841, who had to deal with the American economy crashing, he also was not re-elected. Then there's Franklin Pierce in 1857. There was Benjamin Harrison in 1893, also because of economic issues, and William Howard Taft in 1913, a Republican president who clashed with his own party.
And then, of course, we come to this century and you'll find some very familiar names. So Herbert Hoover, who lost the election in 1933, his presidency was marked by the Great Depression and economic collapse. Jimmy Carter in 1981, his presidency was plagued by economic problems as well as the Iran hostage crisis. And then we have George H.W. Bush, or rather Bush Sr., who lost in 1993 after a recession.
Yes, and you might notice a pattern there that almost all the one-term presidents had pivotal crises to deal with during their terms. And this, coupled with an economic crisis, usually led them losing the faith of the people.
Yeah, so to help us understand what Trump becoming a one-term president says about the times that we live in, we have on Zoom Janet Steele, who is a professor of journalism at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for joining us, Janet. Now, to start with, a U.S. president not being re-elected for a second term is relatively rare. What does it generally say about the president's or his term when this happens?
Well, I think the reason that incumbent presidents usually do get reelected is that they have all of the power of incumbency. They can, as we could see, President Trump had the ability to get media attention no matter what. There were studies that showed how much more just free media time he got than Biden and Harris did. So that's one enormous power that presidents have. Also, I think, you know, unless things are not going well, usually presidents do get reelected. And after you told me about the topic of our conversation today, I was thinking about it. And yes, usually there's some decisive thing that happens so that presidents are not reelected.
And could you draw some examples from other one-term presidents in terms of why they failed to get reelected?
Sure. Well, I guess first I would say that I think the clear reason that Trump failed to get reelected was the coronavirus, that I think had there not been for the pandemic, he would have won handily. The coronavirus completely derailed him, because he so badly mismanaged it. And I think that the first comparison that comes to my mind is Herbert Hoover. Now, in some ways, I feel bad making that comparison because Hoover was a very smart man, a very kind man. He was an engineer. There was no reason that he should have been able to have handled the beginnings of the Great Depression better than he did. But like Trump, he kept insisting that things were going to get better, that it was going to be fine. And it wasn't. And so I think that inability to recognize and acknowledge that there's something terribly wrong was a big problem. And that sunk Herbert Hoover. And of course, Franklin Delano Roosevelt came in with the New Deal, with a much bigger, massive plan to deal with this catastrophe. It was 25% unemployment in the United States, 25%. And so for Trump, I mean, this is catastrophic. We have had more. When I look at, you know, I follow Malaysia Kini, and I see it's very tragic, the number of deaths in Malaysia, the number of cases of coronavirus. We have so outpaced you. You know, it's hundreds of thousands, and it's just terrible. And that Trump kept saying, oh, it's nothing to worry about. It's going to get better. That's on all of these things just showed a complete out of touchness. And so I think Hoover had that out of touch quality that Trump also had with the coronavirus. The next one would be Jimmy Carter. And I think Jimmy Carter, you know, he became president after Nixon resigned, after the all of Watergate and all of that. And Carter had some really bad luck. You know, he's still living. He's a very beloved ex-president. He's astonishing. You know, he's so old, and he and his wife, they're so great. But he had some bad luck. He had the energy crisis, the oil crisis, the price of oil skyrocketed. People were in lines to get gas. He made it popular to wear a sweater all the time because it was so cold in your house, you couldn't afford the heat. Then there was the Iranian hostage crisis. So, I mean, he even used the word malaise, that the U.S. was in a malaise. And then Ronald Reagan comes in and says, it's morning again in America. And so he just came in with this, you know, this positive view of the United States. And it was quite a revolution. You know, people just abandoned Carter in droves. And so Carter had some bad luck. And maybe Americans like to have a more sunny, optimistic view. George Herbert Walker Bush, was an interesting character. I think the battle for the soul of America is actually the battle for the white working class voter. And Reagan was able to get them. Reagan was able to build a coalition of white working class Democrats who voted for him. George Herbert Walker Bush was a very different kind of president. He came from a very elite family. His father had been a member of Congress. He was, you know, from Yale. He was not a Reagan Republican. He was a different kind of Republican. And then, you know, he promised, read my lips, no new taxes. A very famous line. Well, he made a deal with the Democrats and raised taxes, which, as my father would say, sank his boat. Meanwhile, Clinton comes along. And Clinton, what can he do? He appeals to those white working class Democrats. He promises to be a more moderate mainstream Democrat. You know, sometimes, yes, it's bad luck. And sometimes it's maybe not being able to really read the mood of America.
So, Janet, what are some lessons that current leaders can learn from these examples that you've mentioned?
Wow, it's really difficult, and maybe it's sort of too soon to see. One thing that worries me very much is that Trump did not win. He did not win the popular vote. He did not win the Electoral College vote. But that does, Trump may have been, he may have lost, but Trumpism is not over. That coalition, the people who supported him, they're still there. And there it was a vast minority of Americans that supported Trump. And this kind of sense of white working class grievance against minorities, against women, against people of color, threatened by racial justice, you know, that is still there. And so we have to figure out, how do you show white working class Democrats that white power is not the solution, that to say, hey, we are the real Americans, this is not the solution. Democrats need to speak to working class Americans and help give a better life. Trump did nothing for white Americans, white, poor white Americans, working class Americans, other than say, hey, you know, you're the real Americans. You're the real Americans. Forget about those immigrants. Forget about those inner city people, which is a code for Black people. You know, that the Democratic Party is supposed to, you know, we're supposed to be the people that are for good jobs, with good wages, with a better, you know, with good health care, with good Social Security, with a better life for everybody. But somehow the people who you would think would naturally say, oh, yes, that's what I believe in, instead, the thing that Trump could say is, yeah, you know, white people, you're the real Americans. Make America great again for white people, which I think is the encoded message. And that's still there. So we have to address that. So that's one big lesson.
So that actually leads nicely to my next question. Now, just because a president was a one-term president does not necessarily mean that he did not shape or change the nation in some way. I know you mentioned some already, but what would you say are some lasting effects on the U.S. from the Trump presidency?
Well, I think that we are extremely polarized right now. And I think that race is a big divide. And, you know, the coronavirus, because it's very interesting that this struggle for racial justice and the struggle against injustice happened at the same time as the coronavirus. And I think that this battle is not over. You know, we have to reform American policing. You know, I will admit, I'm an American historian by training, and I did not realize how many of our police codes actually are descended from slave codes, that after enslaved Americans were emancipated, that Southern governments came up with ways of keeping them in their so-called place. And that's the origins of so much of modern day policing. And we have to change that. We have to change that. I also think another thing that we have to think about is misinformation. And you know, 2016, it was the Russians. I think we all know that. 2020, it wasn't the Russians. It was us. It was us. And, you know, this time for another discussion, the role of Facebook, the role of Twitter. You know, these are not news organizations, but they have tremendous power to spread misinformation. And maybe their solutions were too little too late. I also think just the distrust of media in general, and I think you have a lot of that in Malaysia too. You know, you can keep having fact checking, but it's people like you and like me who pay attention to the fact checkers. The people who are spreading misinformation are not busy looking up to see something as if it's a rumor or if it's a lie. Yeah. So this is another legacy that we've still got. And also, let's be reminded, Donald Trump could run for president again. He could run in 2024 if he wanted to.
So taking this to a larger question of democracy itself, what does it say about the people's mandate to their leader when they collectively choose not to re-elect them?
Well, I think every election is different, but I think that the whole summer of Black Lives Matter and the struggle against racial injustice and the death of Congressman John Lewis was really important, reminding Americans about the importance of voting, the Voting Rights Act, all of this legislation in the 1960s that happened under a Democratic administration. It was Lyndon Johnson's administration, that the idea of expanding the franchise to make sure that everyone can vote, that there's no poll taxes, there aren't these sneaky ways of disenfranchising people. And I think that the Black Lives Matter movement, I actually went to the March on Washington I forget, time is so weird now. It was a couple months ago. And that was the whole point of it, to get out and vote. It was Al Sharpton was there and, you know, massive numbers of people. And the singular message was, if you don't vote, you can't complain that things don't change. You have to vote. And as Michelle Obama said, make a plan to vote, pack a lunch, you know, wear comfortable shoes, prepare to wait in line or vote by mail. So I think President-elect Biden and Kamala Harris, they owe this to a large part to Black Americans, African Americans who voted in record numbers. You know, it really was American cities, which are, you know, majority African American that did this. So I think we have the power to change things. And we did. There's a significant number of Americans who just felt like, well, you know, my vote doesn't mean anything. There's no difference between the candidates. Well, in this case, there was a difference. And voting, that's the thing. So it's really heartening to see that, yes, you know, you can't stop the people when they speak up.
And Janet, what other democracies around the world learn from both Trump's loss, particularly when it comes to the idea of needing to keep faith with voters?
It's a tricky one, because in a weird way, Trump did keep faith with his supporters. He gave them what he said he would. He tried to build the wall. He restricted immigration. He got the tax cut, although it turned out to be a tax cut for the super rich. So that's the tricky thing. It's not that he broke faith with his supporters. It's that, now I would argue, yeah, but what did you really get? You know, wear a Make America Great Again hat and the ability to fly your Confederate flag if you want. That's not doing anything real for your life. So he didn't break faith with his voters. I think it's more, I think it's breaking faith with the fundamental ideals of the United States of America. Not to be too, you know, I really believe in the U.S. Constitution. I believe in the separation of powers and the Bill of Rights and freedom of expression and freedom of religion and the right to peaceably assemble and to protest, to have your grievances addressed. These are fundamental rights of Americans, and to watch our president trample all over them, I think he broke faith with the American people in that regard. And I think that we spoke up in 2020. I think that was the thing. So I don't think that Trump broke faith with his supporters, you know, giving the devil his due, but it was with all of us.
Thank you so much, Janet. That was Janet Steele, a professor of journalism at George Washington University over in Washington, D.C.
Yes. So in relation to our story today, we have a poll running on Twitter at BFM Radio, and we are asking, how has the outcome of the U.S. presidential elections affected you? So our three options are, I'm geared up for GE15, made me register to vote, or no effect. So right now, I'm geared up for GE15 and no effect is tied. 46.9% of y'all say so, and 6.3% of y'all say made me register to vote. We've got some comments that came in. For example, Rebel to Save the Environment said we need to keep supporting good leadership. Sudeep said nothing's gonna... So Kavindran said, yes, the outcome makes me more optimistic on the collective action that we can endeavor as a species to sustain only our home, the Earth. Although the superpower may differ on many issues, they can be united for a single most important crisis to date, the climate crisis. I think he's referring to the Democratic Party's push to improve, to fight climate change. Mm-hmm. And then you have Leah WCS, who said, yep, wasn't surprised with the outcome, including the delayed announcement of the results. Yeah, so those are some. And oh yeah, so we've got a nice one here as well, who says from Malasaya. Yeah. So he says, we do international trades and export business. Any change of political scenarios, especially in the US, will affect us in Malaysia as well. So he's hoping for the best.
That's right. And if you have any thoughts, you can always continue to tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. I'm afraid we've run out of time, but you know, I think the message for me at least from the US elections is that we should vote regardless of how we may be feeling. I don't know if you guys agree with that. Yeah.
Yes,
100%.
100% agree. And for the 6.1% who say made me register to vote, that I think that's good on them. I think the rest of y'all also go and register to vote regardless of the US presidential outcome.
Yeah. And I guess don't feel down, and you know, just remember that your vote does count, whether you're in Malaysia or whether you're in the US, and to just always, you know, exercise your democratic right.
Yes.
So if you have any thoughts, like I said, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. Or if you'd like to drop us the Bigger Picture team a message, you can look us up on Facebook. Just search for The Bigger Picture and you can find us there. Like us if you'd like. You can follow our updates there. We post lots of interesting things as well. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show. But if you missed any part of it, you can always download the podcasts at bfm.my/dailydigest. We're also available on the BFM app. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and also on Google Podcasts. So no excuse not to find us. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Earth Matters, I'll be speaking to nature and wildlife photographer Sanjit Pal Singh about the role of photography in conservation of nature and wildlife. So that's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. For now, here's Tracy Chapman and talking about a revolution. This has been the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.